Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, the podcast that dives deep into the heart of the mortgage industry. Your host, David Lickin', bringing you the latest insights, trends, and updates from the world of mortgages. Whether you're a seasoned industry veteran or just getting started, this show is your go-to source for all things mortgage. On Lickin' on Lending, we're not just about delivering information, we're about delivering it in a way that's lively, engaging, and yes, even entertaining. You'll hear from a wide range of regular contributors, experts who make the complexities of the mortgage business not just understandable, but enjoyable. Our goal? To keep you informed on the operational aspects of the industry. Everything from regulations and compliance to technology and market trends. Without ever being boring. We believe that staying up to date doesn't have to be dull, and our interactive conversational style ensures you'll be hooked from the get-go. So get ready for detailed discussions, lively debates, and a wealth of knowledge that will help you navigate the ever-changing landscape of the mortgage industry. Let's get started. This is Lickin' on Lending. Now your host, David Lickin'.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you here. Monday, July 1st. We are halfway through the year. It's in the rearview mirror. We're moving forward, looking forward to it's going to be an interesting rest of the year, to put it mildly. That is the truth. We're going to talk about some of it. The Supreme Court ruling on Friday opens up a big can of worms or opportunity. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But anyway, welcome to the podcast. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. Grateful to have Adam DeSantis, Les Parker, Matt Graham, David Kittle, Alice Alvey, Alan Pollock, Bill Corbett, and Mark Helm as contributors to each one of our podcasts. Monday is Bite Mortgage Bite Software Day. That's what I say. Anyway, they've got such a great tool to help you save money. And what I love about what they're doing at Bite is that they allow you to fit your process into the way you do business and not be forced into the way your LOS forces you to do business. So check out Bite Software. There's so much that they do to help you in the process of controlling your business. Not only that, they have the shortest term contracts out there, so you're not locked in. Don't know why you'd ever leave it. Most companies, big companies that are out there using the software, use it because it's affordable and they can exit out if they needed to without any penalties. Also, Finastra, experience the power of a fully integrated approach to the mortgage lending that simplifies the borrowing experience and streamlines the process for employees. Bill Corbett's company that he's working with right now, Pinnacle, uses this software. They do a great job. Also, Lender Homepage, all-in-one AI-powered platform, provides seamless front-end solution to the mortgage business of all sizes, and they help you connect better with borrowers, convert more traffic to leads, and close more loans faster. Also, Truve, loved being with Richard last week at the Total Expert Conference in Minneapolis. Truve is there. It was really great to be with Richard. They replace the processes of the verification of insurance. They do a great job on it. They reduce costs by 80%, and they cover 90% of the workforce. Check them out. They're fastly becoming the industry leader. Also, Angel AI, reimagining the entire mortgage lending process. They just launched last week their free credit repair business. Check out askangel.ai. It is changing the landscape. I was just talking to one of the top originators, Jennifer Martinez, who we've had as a guest on the podcast this morning. She's one of the top originators at Cross Country. And she says, Dave, this continues to challenge and change the way I do business. I can't imagine living without Angel AI. Check it out. Also, Candid does a great job with their modern loan originator system that helps them structure, manage, and grow their business into hundreds of millions a year. Check out Candid, as well as the Mortgage Bankers Association. So grateful for them, as well as Mortgage Collaborative and Lenders One and Mobility MMI, Modex, and the industry's number one learning management system, Knowledge Group. Good to have you all here with us, everyone. This past Wednesday, we released an episode with Dan Smith of LendingPad on the topic of changing the mortgage tech landscape. Got some great feedback on that. And this week, we're releasing the episode with Pavance of SunWest on Angel AI. We're talking about the vision to reality Pavan lays out the roadmap of what he's trying to do and is doing with the entire product. Then on Wednesday, we have another interesting podcast you've got to listen to. So we'll get to check out our website for all the podcasts of what's going on. On Friday, we're releasing a Liquidon leadership interview, Richard Harris Trust Engine. So check them out. Articles today, you'll see them in our linked notes. We'll be talking about those as we get into it. Let's get over to Adam DeSantis with this week's MBA Mortgage Minute.
Hi, I'm Adam DeSantis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, an NBA-led coalition of major housing trade groups sent a letter to the four key House and Senate appropriators urging full funding of the $67 million fiscal year 2025 request for Ginnie Mae's salaries and administrative expenses at HUD. The letter underscored the vital role Ginnie Mae plays in guaranteeing securities backed by FHA, RHS, and VA mortgages and emphasized the need for the full appropriation request to help Ginnie Mae proactively work on initiatives to enhance market liquidity for issuers, to support issuers' ability to make principal and interest advances to investors when borrowers are delinquent, and to buy loans out of pools in order to perform essential loss mitigation. MBA will continue to advocate with lawmakers for our industry's FY25 federal funding priorities, including Ginnie Mae's needs. House floor consideration of the T-HUD appropriations bill is expected in the coming weeks, and parallel Senate action will follow later this year. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Oh, yeah. By the way, sure to sign up for the Mortgage Action Alliance app to support the MBA and all their efforts and what they're doing for us on the Hill by downloading the Mortgage Action Alliance app. It's free to use, and you do not have to be a member of the MBA. However, you should be. Be sure to get signed up. Thank you, Adam, for that good report. A lot in there. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But it's time to get with Les Parker and this week's TM Spotlight and his macro view of the markets. He's got a little surprise in here, folks. A little bit of change, something that Bill Corbett predicted. Let's see if you can hear it.
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
People selling out, people buying in because of the color of the screens.
With the Fed listening to the bonds and data, look for the 30-year mortgage rates to stay below 7.75 and reach 6% by year end, while the 10-year yield falls below 3.5. Stop breakdancing. It will be without significant increases in production because affordability remains a significant obstacle. Additionally, due to delinquency costs and faster prepayment speeds, servicing values will drop significantly. These views are mine. Untangle the ball of confusion at tmspotlight.com.
Great Jerome Powell! Can't you hear bonds talking to you?
Data confusion.
Segmentation, disinflation, pro-inflation, obligation to the datum.
Yeah, that's a toe stamper. I love that. Stomper, I like that. Good report. Good stuff. Can't wait to get into that. But we're going to discuss Les's report along with everything else. But did you hear that? Bill Corbett called it. Recent podcast, you heard Bill Corbett. He said, it's a little bit of a stretch to think we'll be under 6%, which Les had said that we could experience. He's backed that up to around 6%. The lower end of 6%. So that's interesting. We'll get into that in just a minute. By the way, you can sign up for Les Parker's TM Spotlight newsletter. You can do so by getting the paid version for free by putting the word power for Power Seller as you sign up. Go to tmspotlight.com. Check it out. Get signed up. Really good stuff. Matt Graham, founder of and CEO of MBS Live, is here with his market update, and then we're going to discuss it all. So, Matt, what you got?
This is Matt Graham with the MBS Live market update. Last week was an interesting one for the bond market, not quite as high in terms of volatility as 2 weeks ago when we had CPI pushing back against the jobs report from the week before that, but things definitely began to happen and were markedly more volatile than the previous holiday-shortened week. Things really got interesting on Wednesday and especially on Friday. Let's talk about the reasons. The week began in a fairly boring fashion, falling right in line with the previous week's trend. There wasn't much by way of significant economic data, and the data that may have been market moving didn't come in very far from forecast. Of those reports, it would probably really only be consumer confidence that would be considered a market mover, and it came in right in line with forecasts. Other than that, we had Fed speakers, and the Fed is really hard-pressed to say anything new and different recently. Most Fed speeches sound like reworded versions of one another, not a big surprise to the financial market. And then we had Treasury auctions, but as of Tuesday, we were only up to a two-year Treasury auction, and that is not as relevant for the part of the bond market that impacts mortgage rates as the auctions later in the week. Even then, the auctions later in the week didn't have much of an impact because they all came in fairly close to expectations, and their bid-to-cover ratios were a little bit stronger than they had been, but not so much so that it drove a significant amount of bond buying in the wake of the auction results. What really mattered seemed to be overseas events and political events. Overseas events would focus on a couple different things. One would be the Japanese yen currency. I don't know if you'd call it a crisis, but levels have gotten very, very weak. And in the past, when yen has been as weak as it is now, we have tended to see, or the bond market has at least tended to worry about, official level selling, meaning that Japan is selling treasuries in order to buy yen-denominated assets and sort of backstop the slide in yen valuation. This time around, that's such a well-understood and well-documented phenomenon that some people worry there is speculation fueling the volatility, and that we're not seeing as much actual official level selling, but rather speculative selling, and that's increasing volatility. We also have election-related drama in France, and that volatility in European bond markets spilled over to U.S. bond markets. All told, between Europe and Japan, that was given quite a lot of credit for some weakness seen on Wednesday as 10-year yields moved up to the highest levels in a couple weeks. Things didn't really get super interesting for the bond market, though, until Friday. The biggest piece of economic data of the week came out at 8:30 a.m. That is PCE, the PCE price index, the close cousin of the CPI, consumer price index. That is probably the biggest market mover in terms of scheduled economic data. PCE is actually a more preferred metric as far as the Fed is concerned when it comes to assessing our progress toward the 2% annual inflation target. We're still at 2.6%, which is right in line with forecasts, but the month-over-month reading was 0.1, and before it was rounded, it was even a little bit lower than that, and annualizing a reading like that gives us an inflation level well below the 2% target. Bonds aren't rallying aggressively on that because it takes more than just 1 month. It takes 12, actually, of similar readings to be below the 2% target. So traders are waiting for confirmation from additional data. Perhaps most importantly, this is data for the same month that we already got from CPI several weeks ago. So it wasn't really a surprise to see PCE also indicating that the month of May had a good low core inflation reading. And also, the last counterpoint is that it still isn't showing shelter-based or housing-based inflation falling at a pace that is going to help CPI do its thing when it comes to core year-over-year inflation. Then the weird stuff started happening. After the rally on Friday morning following the PCE data, only about 90 minutes later, the bond market started selling off rather aggressively, I might add. And the only explanation that we were left with at the time, and really it was just by process of elimination, would be that we had month and quarter end trading, which never carries a direct implication for the direction it's going to move bonds, but is always a threat when it comes to sort of non-data driven, non-event driven volatility in the bond market. To make a long story short, there can be certain compulsory trades that need to happen by the end of any given month. Traders can make them earlier, a couple days in advance of the month-end deadline, or right up until the month-end deadline. And we saw a little bit of everything this week. Some people speculated this actually increased the selling pressure back on Wednesday, and it was widely credited for the counterintuitive selling Wednesday morning, and then again, the probably pretty logical selling on Wednesday afternoon, considering volume spiked and bond sales spiked right in line with the 4 p.m. cutoff time for some of the traders that make their month-end trades. Then in the overnight session and early Monday morning, we had more weakness to start the new week, and this brings another counterintuitive move after this morning's ISM data, which was good for bonds if you looked at the data in and of itself. Bonds rallied for a split second and then got back to the business of selling. And that's at that point we need to bring politics into the discussion and entertain the possibility that markets are entertaining the possibility of a GOP sweep later this year, and to leave any partisan politics out of this conversation, which I'm always a fan of doing. I will say that when one party, whether it's a red or a blue party, controls everything, then that is typically perceived as bad for the balance of revenue versus treasury issuance, and thus bad for interest rates. So that is a little bit of the speculation that is fueling the counterintuitive weakness that we're seeing after this morning's economic data. Looking ahead, it's a very, very action-packed week for data, and it culminates in Friday's jobs report, which is one of, if not the biggest market mover on any given month, along with the consumer price index, which comes out next week. That's all for this week. Back to you.
All right, Matt, good job. Appreciate that. Bill, let's get over to you. Thinking about both Les's comments. I know you talked to Les just before we went live here on the podcast. Love to get your thoughts on what he said and what Matt said.
So first thing, I'll actually reverse order. You know, Matt's talking about the sell-off on Friday. And
yeah,
one of the things that I learned years and years ago is a lot of times on Fridays, buyers leave before sellers, especially when you get a quarter in to get some sort of a sell-off like that.
Month and quarter in, yep.
I think is not a surprise. His last comment, again, keeping politics out of it, but divided government is generally good for bonds, one party rule. It's just, they're going to drive up the deficit. You just don't know which way they're going to do it. And that's bad for bonds and becoming worse. But back to Les's stuff, I think there were actually three things that he hit in there. And the actual level of mortgage rates is probably the least of the three. While he ratcheted up the floor on mortgage rates, and, you know, all joking aside, I mean, you're in a range, it's not an exact science.
Exactly right. Exactly.
But when he talked about mortgage rates maybe not getting below six, but yet his 10-year at 3.5 remained intact. And he's talked about in the newsletter recently explaining this, that a lot of that is driven by the belief that there is going to be some geopolitical instability, which is going to create the flight to treasuries. So while we're excited by rates coming down, let's put that in the context of it's not going to bright sunny days. The other one is, and again, he touched on it briefly, but as rates come down, for the folks that have servicing, there are going to be a couple of challenges in there, right? You're going to have runoff to deal with. And on the economic side, if there's economic weakness, your delinquency servicing costs are going to go up. And the other thing is, as rates drop, the models kick in, and that's going to be driving down the value of an entire servicing book faster and probably larger than you're going to be able to replace that by a refi blip. Let's not call it a refi boom. So even when you latch on to the headline of where mortgage rates may go, there's a lot of other things in there that are going to be really challenging to address. And folks need to look at the big picture, not just focus on that one number and say, oh, happy days are here again. There's going to be upside, but it's going to be a lot of work for folks to take advantage of it and come out stronger on the other side.
Yeah, it's a really good point on the MSRs. I'm going to get Mark involved in that real quickly, because if this impacts MSRs, you start thinking we're already struggling to be profitable across the industry quarter after quarter. And if we see a deterioration in the values of the MSRs for the reasons you just stated, that could be really pretty devastating to the balance sheet. A lot of these companies that are struggling. And so we just see the headwinds continuing, but now coming from potentially other directions. Mark, your thought about the MSR valuation?
If the MSR valuation goes down, it's really going to strike some of the small mortgage companies extremely hard, who are basically been doing in these rough times, keeping their balance sheet alive and keeping their approvals because of the MSR values. So if you see a 15, 20% decrease in MSR value, it can be very detrimental to the business. And the other thing it takes out of it, even though you might think the lowering of the value of the MSR is going to strike some people to buy it, if we don't have some buyers of MSR, we're going to be in a problem too, because a lot of companies don't just keep it on the balance sheet. They depend on selling it, but they need to sell it at a profit, not at a loss. And the margin on the MSRs has been tighter and tighter over the last few years. So we got to see how that goes. But I think the biggest concern that I have on everything I've heard is about this two-party thing that's going on. If we do have the Republicans come over Democrats, I think two things will happen. I think there will be reduced what I call miscellaneous or messy spending, okay? There'll be more spending for health care and some types of health care and for military. But I think the Republicans are very much aware we need to get this economy back in control. And we got to get home building back in control. So I think, because home building is a major driver of this economy with all the employment it does. And there's two industries drive this country. It's now three. It used to be automobile and housing. Now there's housing, automobile, and tech and AI, tech/AI. But we got to have these industries survive to create these jobs. We need people to be employed, make money, and go out there. So I think there'll be a drive by the party to prove their case if the Republicans win, say, we can do a better job than they did. Look at the jobs we've created. Look at the industry we're supporting, and we're supporting home ownership and all that. Because there's a market of people out there who really want a house but can't do it because of the rate. Right. I haven't run a number, researched the rates, but last time I looked at it, it was an astronomical number of people that were knocked out of housing because of the rates this last 2 years. So I think there'll be some big changes coming up. We have a total change, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I think there's the debate. I mean, you sit and look at the ramifications of that debate this last week on Thursday night, and the abysmal failure of the Biden in there. And even New York Times is calling for him to step down. There's chaos on that side, and there's so nothing but confidence and momentum where we're at. McKittle, let's get over to you. I know you got to exit out here really fast, so it's over to you. Comments.
I don't know. We haven't got it yet. I've got to listen, which everybody will later in the show. Alice Alvey's comment, two things about the Supreme Court decision. That
you can
happened.
Tee it up. She's going to talk about it. You're going to hear about it, but tee it up. That's a really important discussion.
It is. It's the Chevron decision about whether or not the federal courts can hold firm when a regulator makes a decision and pretty much it becomes law instead of actually being put out there as a law. So it affects the fisheries in this decision up in the Northeast. But the ramifications that it spreads out to, particularly to our business and the mortgage business, what happens with the CFPB and Fannie and Freddie?
Because exactly.
Citizens can now take regulators to court over their decisions and litigate it.
Yeah.
So I think it's huge and something we got to watch out for, because I think over the next 30, 60, 90 days, you're going to see a lot of lawsuits filed over what I believe are onerous regulations from our regulators on our business.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you, especially in our industry. It seems like it's been very onerous. They roll it out with a good motive or with some good PR wrapped around it. But if you look at it, it's just getting, and Bob Brooksmith said this so well here recently in his speech, of just how it absolutely a spider web of regulations. It's just not bringing clarity. It just creates a mess. I could get on and on about that. But
I think it also, if I could go back to the political comment, and I don't think it's a bad thing when you have some partisan on here, but it always seems to be when the right or the Republicans have an opportunity to take over all three houses, all of a sudden from the left, that's a bad thing and we need divided government. However, when they have it, it's just a wonderful thing. There's partisan and partisanship, isn't there?
There's partisan, Yeah, that's so much. That's so good, David. Appreciate you being here and your comments. Thoughts on interest rates? How are the members doing at TMC? What's the getting good reports?
Look, we've had 2 months in a row of increased membership over sometimes people have gone out of business or we've
a lot of
consolidation, and we're growing. We're really growing in the credit union space. And
that's really interesting. Yeah, we saw a number of credit unions up at the Total Expert Conference this last week. Really an excellent conference. Again, man, I tell everyone who listens to it, every time I come back from the Accelerate Conference, which Total Expert puts on each year, it is just one of the best. And yes, it's marketing focused, but in this day and age, we can use all the help we can get. Mr. Kittle, thanks for being here. I know you got our exit stage right. Thanks for joining in, being a part of that. You bet. Yeah. Alan, do you have any comments on rates or any of the things we've talked about up to this point? Otherwise, we're going to get into the what David teed up for us on the U.S. Supreme Court.
The only thing I'll add, David, is I really do think right now that nobody's happy about the situation we're in. And I'm talking about uneducated mortgage industry consumers. People feel like the mortgage industry, the housing industry, let's call it, they feel like there's going to be a crash. There's people all over TikTok and Instagram, and everyone goes on social media. Let me refrain. Let me change that. Not everyone. A lot of upcoming home buyers live on social media. They're seeing all of these people talk about it. Everybody's waiting for, is there a crash? Is there going to be a dip in values? Will rates come down? Is it a political play? Is there only going to be one time to buy a house? There's just so much noise right now, and I really don't have a forecast, as none of us do. And my opinion is grim, so I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah. No, we've got, I'm going to have Alan Weiss come on. He's a business partner of mine. I'm invested in Weiss Analytics and what he's doing, but I'm also partnered with him on this new TV program we're doing together, and really interesting concepts about how people buy homes in the future. And you're going to love it because there's a technology component about it, Alan. It's really going to be interesting. Let's get over to Alice Alvey. David teed that up real well before he had to exit. Really an interesting ruling. So it's time for Alice's report. She couldn't join with us live, but she sent in this really interesting recording.
Hello, everyone. Well, by now you may have already heard of the Supreme Court case regarding the Chevron deference. So basically, what we now have as a change is that when the Supreme Court ruled on this, they're essentially saying that the Chevron deference doctrine is overturned. And so they are now holding that federal courts may not defer to an agency's interpretation of an ambiguous statute. So judges in the past, if a law was ambiguous within a regulation, pick any one of them that oversee us, if it was ambiguous, but the regulator had interpreted it a certain way and actually had that in practice, the court would defer to that interpretation and then make a ruling on the case. And as you know, agencies can have different interpretations over time, but at least that interpretation was at a federal level. Now that this is overturned, we'll have to watch it unfold, because now judges will not be, if a regulation is ambiguous, they will not be going to say, okay, CFPB, how were you interpreting this and how were you practicing this? And then using that information to make a decision on the case. The court will make a decision just based on the law, but based on the way that the reg is written. And if it's ambiguous, they may fall one of multiple ways on any particular case, either for it, against it, or send it back for clarification to be written within the law. And so that'll be our challenge, is that courts now, all starting at the state level, will be dictating how these laws are actually going to play out in court. And the regulators may still be interpreting them one way in their audits, but then now have to be thinking about what do they need to clarify in the written law to make sure that what they're citing us for in our world is actually going to hold up if someone wants to spend the money to then take them to court over it. And so certainly in our industry, we'll be taking a deep dive into various regulations that people may say, hey, this is unclear. They've been enforcing it unfairly, and we want to challenge this. And they'll be doing that in industries all across the spectrum. Any industry that's regulated by some federal agency is going to be now taking a look at, okay, what should we be suing over and taking to court to see if we can make clear or change the way the regulator is interpreting a regulation. So lots of this will still be unfolding. And now it's going to be going back to the state level. And here we go again with rules that will be difficult to follow if we get different court opinions at the state level. And we'll watch this unfold over the coming years for sure. Another item that's pending is VA's notice of proposed rulemaking. Just wanted to give you a heads up on this to go check that out. They're adding some clarification on ARM loans, on the adjustment periods, really all of it just falling in line with how we manage ARMs today. But please go check this out. It's got some information about additional disclosures. And then the proposed rule also brings up temporary buy downs. And they're really just adding a lot of clarification for that, aligning with the other agencies for the most part. But today their guidelines are pretty thin on how to manage temporary buy downs. And this is really bringing some good clarity for how we should be managing those and how VA expects them to work. But definitely not anything that's a big surprise. Definitely, like I said, falls in line with what most lenders are already following to keep for to offer temporary buy downs. But definitely check it out. See if there's anything that you feel you need to comment on. And you can find that at regulations.gov. Have a great day, everyone. Back to you, Dave.
Thank you, Alice. Be sure to check out all of Alice's reports. You can find them on our website, Look It On Lending, and go over to the menu item that has various segments. You'll find hers along with everyone's comments, and you can binge on any one of our regulars. There's a lot in that one. And Mark, I want to get back to you on this, where we're looking at the fact that we could find ourselves again having a lot more of the state interpretations, the lawsuits affecting how we do business. It's going to just make it this thing about that much more challenging and convoluted. Your thoughts and comments.
David, a case that I'm working with right now relative to the state of Georgia, onerous interpretations of their abilities to do things with a mortgage company when no other state in the country followed that same suit. So when you start battling individual states with individual opinions on this, can be quite a costly affair for a mortgage company. Because nowadays, every time we touch one of these things and hire an attorney, it's $5,000 to $10,000.
And that's the entry. That's the entry fee, Mark. These can get into the $100,000.
Yeah, that's the entry. That's the entry fee. So I'm very much concerned about that. But at the same time, I look at the other side, and I'm so disgruntled over the years what CFPB has been able to add in there. I thought there for a while we were going to have some relief from what they were doing about this way they were funded and whatnot and doing it. That was an organization that was just, in my opinion, set up all the wrong way and really hasn't done that much good for the industry. They've been more concerned about levying fines to make funds for themselves to be able to pay their bills, because that goes back in their coffer is when they get the fines to pay for what they're doing. And I definitely don't want them to not be able to use their mahogany desks and their super technology and those glacial offices they have. They might not be able to feel comfortable coming to work if they can't do that.
That's funny. Bill, your thoughts on Alice's report, especially with the things going more to the state. Love your thoughts.
So my first thought, is it too late to go back to law school? My second thought is, this to me is yet another example where it continues to shine a spotlight on dysfunction that's taken place in Congress for a long time. And a lot of it goes back to the way the laws are passed have been very superficial, very rushed, and it almost forces the agencies to try and guess what Congress was thinking in creating their requirements. I think it's going to be very, to Alice's point, it's going to be very chaotic for a while. But at the end of the day, the fundamental premise of the agencies should be supporting the efforts to follow the law and not coming up with their own interpretations, number one. And number two, one of the things that we and other industries have struggled with is the defining policy by enforcement actions.
Right.
That's got to go away.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And is good.
And I think that's where this puts the stake in the ground, is that process especially has to go away.
Yeah, that's a great point. Great point. I think when you look at the changing landscape, it's so funny what you're saying, is it too late to go back to law school? The attorneys are going to do well. The court systems are going to be just jammed up with all these lawsuits that are coming, and jammed up even more than they already are, which means it's going to just take forever for them to grind through the process. This is just going to be creating a lot of uncertainty and chaos. How do you run a business when every state court, Supreme Court or whatever court at whatever state level, rules on this.
And that is going to be problematic because everybody you talk to, it's just, tell me where the line is between right and wrong.
Yeah.
And what this does is, again, I think it's the right thing to do, but the outcome is it creates a lot of gray area, which then means you have differences in how businesses, our industry or others, operate based on how aggressively somebody wants to play in the gray space. Mm-hmm. And that has a lot of ramifications. I mean, right down to customers are treated. A no at one company may not actually be a no if somebody else is willing to play more aggressively in the gray space. Makes it, it's the right thing to do again, but it makes it harder for the customers a lot of times to know when do they have to look at other options and when is a no really a no.
Yeah. And then you look at AI and how we're having more and more things to be determined by AI. There's just a lot of complications about the future that we have, we'll be dealing with. Good thoughts. Alan, do you have anything on that? Otherwise, I want to move on to another topic here. It's related to some news headlines that are very significant.
Very well said. And I don't have any additional feedback.
All right. Appreciate that. Something that happened this morning was a good friend of mine, Elliot Lewis, forwarded me a video to watch. Again, it came from NREP. This is, again, talking about what's happening with the lawsuit and now that it's settling. Then we're going to get the court ruling on August, I think it's 14th, on the Real Estate Commission. And it's starting to look at that. And also then Housing Wire put out an article that came out on June 25th. We're going to put both the article and the video about this in the show notes. So if you want to go in and read the specific articles to see what we're referencing, you can go to, or if you're searching, you can just say the Housing Wire article is titled, "Nearly 80% of Brokerages Won't Be Profitable with Lower Agent Commissions." And this came from a study by Account Tech. I haven't had a chance to check out who Account Tech is, but if Housing Wire is quoting them and others are quoting them, I'm going to take it at reliable source. I think it's just really interesting to see that the consequences of these lower commissions, what this means. A lot of these real estate companies, 80% of them, were not going to be profitable. And in the video that they put out about this entitled "Real Estate Corrections, How Shrinking Commissions Could Lead to Stronger Industry." So there's a very interesting perspective. I think there's going to be a lot of real estate companies going out of business because of this, especially those that are, and that's what they say in this video, a lot of them that have a lot of brick and mortar. Those that are have a high cost, and I'm thinking of a number of companies that have the old model of brick and mortar. If we do see that the commissions are reduced, which seems evident in some cases, not always, I think we're going to see a lot of these companies going out of business, which means could we see, I've seen different reports, as much as 80%+ of the realtors that are active in the market leaving the industry. It's going to going back to more of a virtual. I think we're going to see a new model coming out of this NAR lawsuit and ruling. We're going to see a new model and it's going to be much more virtual. One of the companies I'm paying attention to is LPT Realty. Full disclosure, we're talking to them about being a sponsor on Alan Weiss's and my new TV program, Your Home Coast to Coast. They're considered being sponsored, but so I disclose that. But the reality is they are one of the forward-thinking, tech-driven real estate companies, and they're more virtual. So they have a lot lower cost structure. And because they're using so much tech, as like Angel AI's technology, they were going to be able to, they're not using Angel AI's technology, but like Angel AI has technology, so LPT Realty has this. And they're having phenomenal growth, great profits. And I'm looking at some of the old traditional models, brick and mortar. I think a lot of those office spaces are going to be going hasta la vista, baby, going away. Bill, when you look at these articles, I know you guys forward these out. I'd love to get your thoughts on what all of this means. What's your take on these latest articles and video?
So one of the things that I found interesting, but it was, when you think about it, pretty obvious, right? The NAR for years has been gauging themselves and focusing on the number of members. And yes, not quality metrics. And so as the business is changing, I don't think it's at all a surprise that there's going to be a culling of agents. I found the article a little bit hard to follow because they kept changing some of the metrics. They're saying this much would go away at 2%, but we think commissions are going to go to 2.5. But so take some of that detail out of it. And I think their basic, what I took out of it is three premises. So there's going to be massive consolidation in the real estate space. And if you're not a seasoned producing professional, then you should be looking for other opportunities. I think the brick and mortar, it's going to become a much more competitive business. And the costs that make sense are the costs that drive revenue, not the costs that look pretty. And then the challenge they brought in from the loan officer side of not only less realtors, but how they're structured is going to have to radically change as a loan officer, how you find and engage with the realtors.
Yeah, so true. And what does it mean for the mortgage loan originators? Everything. I think this is what this, where I'm going to this. I want to go to a point that it is really important, which came out at the Total Expert Conference, is we, the lenders, have a unique opportunity to connect with the consumer and we be the ones to drive the transaction. And that's what's happening. I'm seeing you're nodding on the video. Bill, comment.
Yeah. So one of the things that played with forever is that conundrum of you need to engage the realtors. They're very important. But on the other hand, how do you get to the customer before they even get to a realtor? Yeah. And if what they're talking about here is going to come to play, and specifically just the visual, the brick and mortar goes away. You can't walk in with a dozen donuts. How are you going to get the customers? And if you keep trying to go down the same funnel that everybody else is, it's not going to work. Yes, as a loan officer in a sales organization, yes, you have to devote a lot of time to adapting to the new model and how do you engage the realtors, but you need to find the roads that nobody else is on yet.
Yep.
It ends with the customer.
Spot on. Alan, any thoughts you're thinking about hearing us talk about this?
Yeah, I read through the articles and watched the video. It's very true. There was a comment that said that maybe 80% of the real estate offices or organizations could go out of business. Obviously, that's a drastic number, but they said that 65% of them, so if the commission rate was to go down to 2%, that was the 80% number. If the number went down to 2.5%, so a half a point higher, 60% would have 60%. Trouble continuing to maintain their current level of business. And it's not really so much of a technology issue. In the mortgage side, we can say that our technology costs are really high and organizationally our costs are high. These are smaller brokerage shops. These are folks that were just living on commission. So they do have to restructure how they work. There's going to be an amazing opportunity. The article mentions this. There's going to be an amazing opportunity for the folks that stay in the business just because they'll become stronger professionals. They'll become better at their job. They'll do better coaching and they'll have better relationships with the originators in the industry. It's an interesting happens.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Mark, your thoughts?
I got a lot and I don't even know where to start. the first place I'll start is that when they talk about 80% of the realtors going together, which you gentlemen on the phone don't know, in the past 30 years, two different times for a total of about 16 years, I own interest in two different real estate companies. And it was good investment for a while, and a bad investment for a while, the best of times, the worst of times.
Yeah.
Okay. But what I'm looking at right now, when they say 80% are going to go away, what's going to happen? 80% are going to go away, but that business is not necessarily going to go away.
The business,
it's going to move over. So the industry is not going to die because nobody's selling homes and all this. It's going to go over to the real estate agencies that are efficient and know what they're doing, use the right kind of technology and all those things. Now, what I'm here to tell you from what I've seen recently is there's going to be a major change in the real estate stake we're seeing. I'm in the process, and it's not a trade secret. I'm going to tell you what I'm doing. I'm in the process of recruiting about 25 realtors to be loan officers for our organization. We've got a recruiter approach us, and we put an outstanding program together, and we're going to take and train realtors that have been realtors 4 or 5 years. It's never really made any real money, and we're going to make them real estate / loan officers. And that's fine in most states as long as you do proper disclosure. And we're going to make sure we have a real good law firm, making sure we do everything right on that. We're already working on that. When we do that, we have somebody now that can market to a customer. If you're looking for a home, let me pre-qualify you right now for the home you look for, and then I can help you cherry pick what's out there in the market that will fall inside your parameters. There's going to be all kinds of new marketing tools that grow out of this, which I really think is going to help our industry a great deal. I don't have a lot of compassion for the companies that have been going out of the market because they never did any work. They're the people that listed a piece of property and never did any work to sell it. They hired all these people that find their next door neighbors that want to list a piece of property. They list it. They do two of those a year. That's all the business they did. They were virtual. They were never in the office. They were never recruiting and whatnot. You never could call on them as a loan officer because you don't know where the heck they were. And that was detrimental to the industry. So I think some of this is going to be a positive. It's going to be negative too, but not as big a negative as people think. We got to have real estate sales in this country, and loan officers have to have real estate loans for our economy to grow. And we're not going to have the Home Depots of the world and the Lowe's being in business if they can't. And they're doing great right now in the business. You ought to go stand in line there to check out. Those people are doing all kind of things to the houses they got since they're not buying a new house. So I think that the thing's going to thrive, but I think people are going to have to take a different approach on how they're going to handle things. Now, for one, I'm excited about the thing that we're getting into, because I think it's going to be very positive for our company, because we're going to be able to reach a lot more customers, a lot more grounds root, especially in our footprint, which is rural America, which doesn't get the kind of service it should from realtors or mortgage companies.
There's so much about this topic, and that we're going to dedicate a whole special interview or podcast on this. I'd like to invite you guys into this, because I think the ramifications are, especially when you look at companies like Angel AI, what Pavan is doing, and I'm texting him off to the side here as we're talking, that really is interesting because of what he's setting up in his new model. Again, everything I say about Angel AI is they're reinventing and reimagining the entire experience of buying and financing a home. And we are in a transformative place in our industry, in our country. We have all these new regulations. We look at the latest lawsuit. I got to tell you, folks, we have got an industry that is going to be going through massive changes. We got to spend time talking about this with our executive communities, our C-suite executives. But we also have to be talking to other members. That's why I think being members of the MBA, being a member of the collaborative, the Lenders One, and having us talk more about this as a community, because this is going to change. I think this is one of the contributing factors why we're averaging 78,000 listens per day to our podcast, because we talk about this stuff on here. People are looking hungry for critical thought and discussion around these issues. So I'm very excited about it. We could go on and on. We're going to make up a separate podcast. Alan Pollock is here with the tech update. Alan, I always love what you're talking about. I may have one on you. Alan, have you heard of, let me give it, drum roll this here for a minute.
All right.
Have you heard of ChatHub?
No.
You have got to go check out ChatHub, and I have it up and running, and it was introduced to me today, of all people, by my urologist, who I'm consulting with and working with on his business, and he says, check out Chat. It is a hub that brings in ChatGPT, Gemini, Claude 3, Bing Copilot, Perplexity, and three others, Gamma being one of them, Chats. And so you use this. Mark, you love AI. Check out ChatHub. And what is it? ChatHub.
Yeah, let's be very careful. Do not go to chathub.com.
To chathub.com. Yeah.
You likely will get in trouble from your HR department because your computer will alert them that you've gone somewhere you shouldn't.
I made that mistake. I made that. I go, oops, back up. So it's chathub.com. I think it's GG. My screen's so small over here.
I Googled it now.
You got it? So I can't wait. So I thought, Mark, I got to share that one. Got to jump up on you, leg up on you. Well, what you got us in the tech report?
First, thanks everyone for listening this week. It's another great week as usual. David, I have a quote that I heard. This was really good. Knowledge is knowing that a tomato is classified as a fruit, but wisdom is knowing not to put it in a fruit salad.
That's good. Yes. That's good. Yeah.
So a couple little tidbits on just tech and unicorn companies and such. Get this. Uber is going to give about 175 people in select US and Canadian cities $1,000 to spend on Uber, public transit, and other modes of transit if they can give up their car for 5 weeks. So some people may have a low car payment or just want to make $1,000.
Wow.
So it's a trial that they're doing. About 175 people will get $1,000 from Uber.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know, in your Amazon packaging, David, how you get, they call them air pillows. It's basically protects what's in the package from.
Right. Yeah. There's big air pillows. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So Amazon is replacing, this number's staggering. This is why I'm bringing it up today. Amazon is replacing 95% of its plastic packaging air pillows, excuse me, with paper filler. So you probably have already seen, some of you listening, or those boxes when you get home from the office, there's about 40 boxes in front of your house. And when you break them up and put them in the recycle for your family, you see all the paper filling now. It's made from 100% recycled material. But get this, the swap going from air pillows to paper is 15 billion plastic pillows a year. That is an insane amount of plastic pillows that they were putting into boxes. I'll read that number again. 15 billion.
15 billion of those little pillows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? Why didn't Amazon convert that into an advertising opportunity and allow other companies to advertise on the plastic pillows and convert the 15 billion into 15 billion?
I thought the plastic pillows were brilliant. Saves all the space. They seem very affordable.
My dogs love them.
Yeah.
Anyways,
Bill, you got a thought. I could tell. I saw a thought come out of it.
It's also what, good or bad, go back to the beginning with the plastic pillows, is because they found the optimum size box for all their, for their robotic processes.
Yes.
A lot of those things, that the pillow is not there necessarily to protect the item, which is usually in its own protective container. It's because that was the most efficient way for them to deliver the product.
That's right. Great point.
Great point.
Really, yeah, we forget about all that automation and stuff that is Amazon, that is packed into that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about,
excuse the pun, packed into that. That's good.
Yeah. I'm going to save, just because we threw in an extra topic today, David, which is really important about the real estate commissions in the industry. I won't go through everything that I'd mentioned, but I have one or two more things I'll bring up. Everyone knows that on TikTok and Instagram, there's a lot of loan officers that are talking about tips, how to handle lending. They're not offering rates or pre-approvals or personalized advice. They're just talking about, and if you are advertising, this is something you want to consider, but this is great. This was a little tip that I had seen, and it said, if you ask the seller to reduce the price of an $800,000 home by $20,000, you'll save $158 per month. But if you ask the seller for a $20,000 credit instead to buy down your interest rate, you'll save $822 per month. And that, all these weeks, David, leading in, when we talk about the market and volume and technology and costs, David Kittle's always very positive, right? And says, just get out there and sell. And I've been saying the same, right? You got to just educate. You have to educate. This is that education. And I know a lot of originators know about it, but go on TikTok, go on Instagram, take a look at what some of these originators are doing out there. Some really just great information and ideas. Yes, maybe you can really follow them.
Yeah.
Let's talk a couple things I stole or borrowed, I should say, from the Rob Hoffman.
Yes.
By the way, I use AI to scan every single Rob Crisman report and provide me with bullets on technology vendors. So if you don't know how to use AI, that's one way you can use it.
Yeah.
All right. So Mobility Market Intelligence, MMI, get this. They released what they call LO Highlight Reels. It's a video creation tool for loan originators to share their success and industry visibility. So I just talked about that TikTok video. It could be that you're emailing it, texting whoever to your potential prospects, your credit union, you're a small community bank. Check out MMI. Great technology. Bunzo, they used to be a sponsor of our program. They just released a cheat sheet for compliant and effective SMS marketing in the mortgage industry. So if you're not sure about how to handle SMS, we all thought you send emails on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Fridays are a big no. Mondays are only of importance. Bunzo is saying, hey, you're moving into SMS marketing. This is the path you want to go down. So check that out. Also, Vesta. We know Vesta. They're a loan origination system provider. So a couple of years ago, I'd say about 2 years ago, everybody was like, who is this new LOS system, right? There was a gentleman that left the Blend technology team, created his own LOS. He just did an integrated tool or an integrated service in his system with Freddie Mac's Loan Product Advisor. So LPA is now built inside of Vesta. So I bring that up. A lot of people recently, in some conversations I've had, like, whatever happened to that new LOS? And everybody has a different way to describe it. This is the first update I've heard of them in a while, so go check that out.
Yeah, their logo isn't it one of those little Vespa scooters? Is it?
I don't know. That'd be cool, pretty cool if that's what it was.
I should play on these.
So just two more quick items. The second to last one is Exactus. They're known for their mortgage verification technology. Get this. Love this. They created what they call active listing scan. The service scans addresses, residential addresses, for changes in listing status and alerts. And it tells those lenders when those properties are newly listed. But it helps lenders get ahead. Obviously, if you're selling a home, you're going to move and you're going to need a new mortgage, right? Or other statuses that may occur to your property. The tool leverages all the MLS data and public records, and it works in all 50 states. Very interesting. And David, this is the whammy. You're going to win the game show, and I'm going to hit the golden buzzer, and you're going to, like a rocket ship, you're going to boost out of your chair, and you're going to see Elon Musk.
The golden ticket. Okay. All right.
Golden ticket. So VantageScore just launched what they call Market Game. It's a tool that provides lenders with insights into their addressable market by using the VantageScore 4.0 credit scoring model. Here's the best part. You ready? The tool, I hate when people call things a tool. It's a piece of technology. It's a solution. It's, you know, but anyways, The tool helps financial institutions identify new lendable customers and expanded access to credit. You guys understand what that means, right? They're going to tell you who is a potential customer.
Check that out.
At VantageScore. And since we launched David Licken over into the rings of Saturn, I will say goodbye to you all from my segment. Thank you. We'll see
you all next week.
Have a great week, everybody.
Yeah, it's so good. Appreciate you being here, Alan. Sorry we went on a little bit longer than normal because I know we did, but there was a lot to talk about. And I think a lot of the discussion that we do here on this podcast is so much of why people come back. Like I said in a video I just recorded, people come here for the content. They come back for the conversational component of what we're doing when we're talking about it and sharing and discussing it. It's really good. Critical thought going on here. Thank you so much, everyone. So good to have you here. Thank you to Adam, Les, Matt, and David, Alice, Alan, Bill, and Mark. Got a great lineup of great critical thinkers here with some great content. Also, special thank you to our sponsors, Byte Software, Finastra, Lender Homepage, Truve, Angel AI, Candid, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, Mobility MMI. We just heard what they're doing new, as well as Modex and Knowledge Cube. So grateful to have you. Check out our website, lickinonlending.com, as well as all the information about each one of our sponsors. Got a lot in there. Go check out our website. Look forward to having you back. Look forward to being here next week with you with another important report. What will we be talking about next week? This is just getting more and more interesting each week. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending. Our passion is to bring you the latest insights, trends, and updates from the world of mortgages. So on this show, if you're a seasoned industry veteran or just getting started, it's your go-to source for all things mortgage. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find us on LinkedIn and Twitter at David Licken, on Facebook at David.Licken, and on Instagram at DLicken. Take care, and we'll see you next time on Lickin' on Lending.